and welcome to our very special episode of Screaming is Serious Business. No, it really is. I am your host, Harry Thomas, and in this episode, I'll be talking with Claire Levison-Gendler, who was the set decorator for the hit HBO show Chernobyl. Yes, guys, we're in our third episode, and we managed to spot something like this. And I want to say a huge, huge thank you, huge shout out to my girlfriend, Emily Rose Welsh, who managed to get us this interview with Claire. I'll link her photography page down in the show notes below. And so we'll be diving into Claire's experiences with working on Chernobyl and her past experiences within her career as a set decorator or set designer, if you will. Before we go further into this episode, apologies in advance with the audio quality. We blame COVID for the dropping quality as we've had to do some social distancing. And so this virtual talk that we've had with Claire came with its side effects. Now, Jasper, unfortunately, is unable to join us for this episode, but he'll be back for our next. So, without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy. So, hi, Claire. Thank you so much for joining our show. It just really means a lot to us. Absolute pleasure. So Claire, I want to touch on a few things regarding your time on working on the hit TV show Chernobyl. But first and foremost, I know I said this in our email discussions, but a huge congratulations yet again to you and your team for winning a BAFTA for Chernobyl. That was quite recently. In fact, I rewatched Chernobyl again last night, and this time around, I just appreciated more on how it was the first TV show for me where it felt so real, and it really just blew me away. And it, you know, you being a set decorator for the show, it's working on a team on the whole set really adds to that authentic value of the show. And we did a bit of research on you before doing this interview with you, and we were so fascinated on the fact that you and Luke Hall went to is it Lithuania and Ukraine, and you went to museums to get certain props for the show. That's fascinating to me, and I think it's definitely an element of what makes it so fascinating. So my first question to you is, what got you into set design, and what led you into working on the set for Chernobyl?
Well, there was a big gap from starting to getting there, but just, basically, I'm an artist, I'm a painter and a sculptor, and that's what I started off doing, but it was quite difficult back then. I didn't really have much of a direction. And so I used to do lots of different things, really, from illustration to all different things. And then I did a job which actually had nothing to do with art. It was like a promotion job for Warner Brothers. It was Bugs Bunny's 50th anniversary. Ooh, wow. And we ended up at Pinewood Studios. And I'd never been there before.
Yeah.
And while we were kind of getting the whole, it was like a big birthday party for Bugs Bunny. And while we were getting the whole event done in the gardens, I met somebody there who said, oh, you know, would you like to have a little tour of the studio? So I said, yeah, sure. So they took me around the studio. At the time, it was in a milk float. That's how I used to get around Pinewood. And at the time, they were filming the first Batman, the Tim Burton Batman. And I got in the car in the Batman. You know, it was sort of a freer time, really. We drove around the studios, and then at one point we drove up like a little alley, and there were guys there, and they were making this cow. I don't know what it was. It was like, you know, it was plaster and just, and I was like, oh, that looks like the kind of environment that I like. And so I kind of asked them a few questions, whatever. I think they were doing something for one of the Aliens film. I can't remember which one at the time.
Oh, was it?
I honestly can't remember. I'd have to look at the dates. But I thought, I feel like I want to do that, something like that. And then basically, once we'd done the party, I went traveling for a year, but when I came back, I thought, oh, I really want to do that. So I made some phone calls to Pinewood, and there was a prop house there called Image Animation. They did like special effects and stuff like that. And I gave the guy a call, and he said, okay, we'll come down with your portfolio. And so I did. And it was Friday, and he went, okay, start Monday, I'll give you 2 weeks back. And I said, okay, great. And and that was it, really. And then while I was there, I was doing special effects. I worked on things like Hellraiser and horror films.
Yeah.
And I met a couple of people while I was doing it, and I wasn't there for very long. And I always tell this story, and up until now, I kind of thought it was like a myth, but I actually found photographs. I must have taken some photographs on the day. But I remember sitting in the shoot. It was lunchtime, and I went outside and sat on the wall. And while I was sitting there, and I'd only been there a couple of days, and you know, and I was just like in awe of all these model makers and everything. While I was sitting there, a guy sat down next to me, and he said hello, and I said hello, and he was eating a sandwich, and I realised it was Roy Scheider. He was in Jaws at the time. I loved him, and I was like, anyway, I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, it's Roy Scheider, and I was all excited. And while we were sitting there, three elephants passed us in full Indian regalia.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I'd never seen anything like it. That wouldn't happen now, because you can't take elephants out now. But at the time, it was like this whole crazy, mad, and I just felt like, oh, this is home, this is nice. And so, yeah, I kind of went on from there, and it was quite difficult then, because there wasn't TV like there is, or they didn't make films in the same, you know, it was all a lot less. So it was kind of a struggle, but that was pretty much how I started. And my first film, I met somebody there who gave me the number of the set decorator who I worked with for a few years, who's my mentor, really, Peter Young. And I worked on Judge Dredd, the one with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh yeah, wow, I love Judge Dredd.
It kind of went on from there, really. So that was quite far away from Chernobyl. Chernobyl, when I got the call from Luke to see if it was something I would be interested in, I was interested straight away.
Yeah.
Because I'm much more interested in things that, like, it was quite gritty. I knew there'd be some, you know, big physical sets, and which I'm not really that interested in contemporary unless there's kind of an angle on it, really.
Yeah.
I'm not really... I'm less of the sort of interior decorator type. I'm much more interested in, you know, creating things. I suppose because I'm an artist, it just appeals to me more.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to do it when I met him. I really wanted to do it. I must admit, the thought of being in Lithuania, where I had never seen, I had no idea what it was like there for 9 months, was a little bit scary. And when I first got out there, it was like minus 20 degrees.
Oh my
I quite
God.
Like the sunshine, and I'm like, oh. It was definitely, I knew I wanted to do it. And and basically he'd called me before Christmas. He'd already started on it, but I was working on a different job, and I didn't want, I never really liked to leave a job until I finished it. I feel like I like to the end. And he was really understanding of that and said, okay, come in the new year, even though he really wanted me to sort of get going. But over that whole Christmas, those 2 weeks of Christmas, I just sunk myself into everything I could to do with Chernobyl. I watched YouTube and documentaries.
There's so much history.
There's so much stuff, which is kind of amazing, but also quite daunting, because it's like an actual event, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that you get that right.
I guess also, when you went out to Ukraine, you know, you went to the museums to, you know, ask for props and stuff. Like, you know, obviously it being a museum, you must have learned a lot there.
Well, we did. And we, to be honest, there was only a certain amount of stuff that we could get from the museum. So we had an awful lot of stuff made. We did bring a few things over from the UK, but actually most of the stuff that we got was from Lithuania, and also in Ukraine. There were some amazing places in Ukraine, and there was an amazing market in Ukraine that just, you could just get everything, literally
get everything.
It was amazing. It went on for miles. It was like this kind of incredible, it was like a boot fair, really. Just all these people just kind of camped out all the way along the railway tracks for miles and miles and miles, selling everything from pickled food to, you know, parts of old Russian uniforms to gloves. I mean, literally everything. It was a production by a stroke decorator's dream. I literally couldn't bring enough bags every time.
Oh yeah, the luggage must have been ridiculous.
It was, you know, at one point I got stopped from bringing some, because I was bringing something through that looked a little bit dodgy. And that was kind of scary at the time. But the whole, it was worth it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, amazing place to find things, and to find things that you'd never be able to find here. I mean, we're really lucky in London. We have like these most amazing prop houses. They're incredible. You know, and they do stuff from sort of contemporary to period. Contemporary to period. It's just everything, and we're really lucky that we're able to go in and do that, whereas you know, a lot of other countries, they do not have that available to them, and you kind of have to work out systems with shops buying stuff, renting it from them, you know. It's a huge struggle
It's great that you've got like the resources, and going back from what you said earlier about, you know, how you make connections with other people, like that's you know, it's like how the saying goes, like it's not what you know, it's who you know. And you met like some amazing people, and that obviously put you in a path of like working on Chernobyl and other shows and as well. And it's just so amazing that you've been, over the years, been able to do all this amazing work. And especially when it comes to props, like, again, you've got the facilities there, and it must have been such an amazing experience to go out and find props and find actual artifacts within that event, within that time. It must have been so great for you. My second question is like, how did your previous experiences and skills set you up for working on the show, on a big HBO exclusive? And what did you gain from working on Chernobyl that you can take into other shows like Little Birds on Netflix?
Well, I mean, I think every job is so different. You know, you work on jobs that are like period jobs, things from like Vanity Fair to like Top Boy to they're all very different and films. I mean, I think in every job it's almost like starting again, really. Obviously you have your experience and you kind of know how you're going to approach everything, but what is the joy of every job is that it's like a whole new learning curve. You always come into there's always issues that come along that you've never dealt with before, and that it's problem solving. The job is really problem solving. There's always things that come along that you have to kind of work out. And although obviously you do take experience from other jobs along with you, but actually every job presents its own new problems. I mean, I never had a job before where, although I know other people have had something similar, where on Chernobyl, we, for Pripyat, for the evacuation scene, we went to a place, Fabianiskas. They had the car parks there. We grassed over all the car parks all the way down. So that because Pripyat at the time was like a new town, it was fresh, it was all lawns and there were flowers, and we did planting or whatever. So we did that. We kind of turfed over a lot of car park area that went on for quite a way. And it was the hottest temperatures that they'd had for years. I think we had it here as well in the UK. And that's not great for grass, and it had to be out there for a certain period of time before, when we dressed it and after. And so we had to water it, which, you know, which is quite a mammoth feat. And in the end, we got in contact with the fire brigade there, and they very kindly came out every day and watered our grass for us. So that, you know, that at the time, when you know you've got to water the grass and you know it's not going to be just getting hoses in, and you know, you come up with problems that's not happened to me before. But and obviously we were really lucky that they were kind of amiable and they came along and they did that for us. But you know, there's always issues that come up with various jobs that you have to kind of surmount and solve. And
adapt to, Do you feel like Chernobyl was the most sort of interesting thing to set to work on, or was there other things in the past that you felt like was more so interesting?
I don't feel like that about those. They're all like my babies, everything I worked on. It's like I love each job. They're all unique, and there's all you take so much from it. I mean, I worked last year in Tarifa and in Manchester. We went to tenders a lot for Little Birds, which is currently on Sky Atlantic, and that was a great job. It was so different. It was a tiny budget. It's very lovely. Everyone keeps saying it looks nice, that's nice, and that, well, we had loads of money. We didn't. It was very, very tiny budget. So when you have like a very small budget, then you've got to think about things in a different way, because still visually there's stuff you want to do. But financially, you are not able to do some of those things. So you have to kind of come at it from a different position. I mean, you know, on Chernobyl, we were lucky we had a good budget and we were able to get done what we wanted to do. But on Little Birds, we didn't. So there was a lot of time where, you know, I made props on Little Birds. quite a lot of them. Oh, wow. I also painted rooms. I have an amazing painter who works with me. You know, time and various reasons. There's a room, a gold room, where it's all kind of blossom. You know, I was up a ladder painting. That, you know, I don't mind. I quite like it. I'm quite practical. I'm quite, you know, I like to roll my sleeves up and get involved. So I don't mind it. But it's more about if I want it to be done, if I want it like that, and I know I don't have the money, but I do have the skills, that I'm happy to throw myself into it because I want it to look a certain way.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, when budget is right, that's what you do. I'd never be too grand to do anything. The aim is all about what it looks like in the end.
Exactly.
The goal is to look, you know, as good as you possibly can.
And if that costs a lot of money, then so be it. I mean, like, it's a creative process, and that I guess for a lot of people that are starting out in like your particular field of expertise, like it can be, do you feel like it, I mean, anyway, for you when you were starting out, do you feel it was really difficult to sort of budget for something that could potentially cost a lot of money down the road when it comes to pop creation and just set design in general?
The thing is, you have to know all of that long before you've even started, really. Sometimes you get given a budget, sometimes you don't get given a budget, and you have to put a budget in. And so you have to look. I mean, that would be the thing where experience definitely helps you along the line, because now I can look at something and I kind of know what everything costs.
Yeah.
But again, you don't know everything. You often sort of come into contact with jobs that you've never experienced that kind of thing before.
Yeah.
You've never filmed in a place or had to, you know, do certain things, so you don't know what it costs. But you know, experience helps you kind of form it and shape it. So you have to kind of be quite, again, you have to cut your cloth accordingly on certain jobs. So for example, on the job that I'm on at the moment, we will end up doing a palace, and the location where we are has fabric walls, and they're a little bit grubby, so we will be cutting those fabric walls. However, it's a listed building, and all of it we have to be very careful with. So the way that we put our fabric on, we have to be very careful with. We have to get experts into that. But the fabric that we're putting on those walls is very specific in terms of the look that the designer wants and that we've talked about. And so he came up with various ideas, and then we kind of stopped on one pattern, and then we had our graphic artist sort of created that, so that that's exactly the image that we want. And then we've had that that fabric made in India. So the fabric's been made in India. It's more reasonable in terms of cost-wise for us to have it there, even though it seems like quite a grand thing to do. But there's quite, it's like 100 meters of fabric. So
yeah, wow.
You know, and now that's been sent back. And it's the same. It's the same with lots of things. It's like that is not necessarily something I may be able to do on another job. I may have to find a fabric that we can actually afford that we can put on the walls, potentially, or find a cheaper way of doing it. Maybe I didn't have the fabric. Mm. We've had this fabric made. Maybe I would have thought about having the fabric printed if that worked out. You know, there's different ways of
ways of making things like budget friendly.
Yeah, ultimately the goal is always about the aesthetic. Mm. So it's what it's going to look like. So for me, I understand that I can't always spend the money in a certain way and whatever, but that's not necessarily a problem for me. Obviously, it's always nice to do it as beautifully as you can.
Yeah.
But sometimes your budget won't allow that. However, you still want it to look as good as you can. So, you know, you have to find creative ways around that to make that work.
When it comes to pop creation, have you in the past found it difficult to create a certain pop, and would you get other people to create it for you, or has that always just been like a huge challenge for you to do and you would just stick by it and create it yourself, or have you had
I would never do it now. I mean, basically we have the most amazing model makers and houses that create things. I'm a painter and a sculptor, so I have certain abilities, and sometimes I can knock things up, but I wouldn't really do that because, you know, everybody has their job, and as long as you've got the budget for that to happen, that's absolutely great. But to give you an example, on Little Birds, there was a major prop that was actually, it was a stone dildo is what it was, and it was scripted as having wings. Yeah. And it was quite a big prop, and so we could have had that made, or we would have had it made, but at the time when I read the script, I wasn't working. It was the summer, we weren't due to start. And I thought, I might have a go at just making something, like, because I obviously I'm in contact with the designer, just to get some ideas together, and eventually we'll get the prop made. So I cast a couple in resin, and then I also I sculpted a couple from soapstone, just to get an idea of what we wanted. And it was to be quite rough. It was almost like it was actually based on a Roman prop.
Okay.
In Roman times, people were hung these kind of penises outside their house to ward off evil spirits. So it was kind of based on some reference from that. So I made it, and in the end, the director really loved one of the kind of marble ones that I did, so we stuck with it. So that was fine. And I had other objects made for the brothel scene that I didn't do. It just happened that I'll do it. But when we were out in Tarifa in Spain, which is kind of, you know, it's not in the middle of nowhere, but it's, you know, it's quite a distance from anywhere, we got a script note back. They were in the middle of filming the brothel, and basically the revision said that they smashed that prop, which is fine, they throw it, but normally when things get broken, you need repeat. If something goes wrong with the way you filmed it, you need to film it again, and actually normally you give somebody, you know, 3 to 5 to whatever amounts of things.
Copies.
So that they can keep doing it. But we only had the one. So the rest of the following, that we had a day to do it. The rest of the following day was spent with the buyer running around Spain trying to find air dry clay and paint, which came back to me. And then I made copies of it. So it wasn't quite as beautiful as the original, but it would have done the job. She spent the whole night before making these things and drying them with a hairdryer. And they were used.
Wow.
And actually, I can't remember. I've only stumped since it's been. I don't know if you even saw it in the end. Normally, I wouldn't make it. You know, that would be somebody else's job. But just, you know, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, for sure. Like, obviously, there's other people involved, and it's, I guess it's down to the writer or director to make the decision about whether to keep things in or not, for sure. What insights can you give to people that are going into set design and want to just sort of go into work in that sort of industry? People are starting out, like, what sort of insights can you give to those people?
Well, I think it's quite different now from when I started because there's lots of courses and things around people can do. And I think if you want to go, if you want to be a designer, that's also a different kind of medium in terms of you can come to these positions with all different levels of experience and skill, and it's about having an eye. And I've worked with really big designers that only draw stick men. I've also worked with people that are absolutely incredible artists, so amazing. They can get their vision on paper beautifully.
Nice.
But the reality is that there are concept artists and people who can do that for you. So as long as you can translate your vision and you know what that is, there's a way to get across to people. But there are some really good courses now. There's the film schools and various things. Experience is good. There's kind of like a line through things. I didn't have any formal training at the time. I didn't have any kind of qualifications, and I just kind of worked my way up. But now it's it's a lot busier. There's a lot more work. So there's a lot more opportunity. And I think it does depend on the kind of person that you are. I think it's re I do believe, even though I didn't have any at the time, because I did a degree, much later. In fact, only I finished a degree that I did part time only 5 years ago. So it's kind of like, yeah, I just fancied doing it. But actually, it didn't particularly help me with work or getting a job. I just wanted to do it. I never had the qualifications. However, I think it's different now. If I was starting again now, I think I would look at all the courses that are available to me because they give you a grounding. But I still think even with that, you have to be prepared to, your entry level into business, however good you've been and whatever your qualifications are, it's at the bottom and it kind of should be there. You have to kind of earn your stripes, really.
Yeah, I
And
guess
it
you need
needs
like a portfolio at the end of the day of like stuff that you've done, and that's the most important thing, than I think a degree. And I think that sort of goes for any particular creative arts sort of medium. It's, I guess for a lot of people that are hiring set designers or people that do filmmaking, like, obviously having a portfolio, having this like work that you've previously done before to show that you're at this skill set is very important.
yeah, I think that's important. I mean, I don't know what kind, I've not really looked into what kind of courses are available for people. I'm not necessarily sure that at every level you would need a full degree. It's very nice, but it's not for everybody. When I left school, I didn't really have any qualifications. I had art. I was good at art. That was what I did. Everything else, it was hopeless. I was hopeless. And so I don't, I've done a degree now, which is it's lovely, and I really enjoyed it, and I got a lot out of it. But at the time, that wasn't for me. I was a very practical person. I loved art. I loved making things. I loved every medium I could get my hands on, and I was very practical and physical about things. So, I fell into films really because I was a maker. But actually, as time's gone on, the output that I do is not so much like that. It's more about, I mean, even though it's physical, I do dress sets and I like to. It is much more about aesthetics, and I've learned a lot on the way. So I'd never be put off by somebody, who came to me, especially in terms of set decoration, who had an eye for things. But ultimately, you can come to that in a different way. There are set decorators out there who are like interior designers or have you know, they have art history or the history of furniture and design and all kinds of reasons, you know, all kinds of backgrounds, graduate and various, of how they've come to the thing. And I think that's sort of the beauty of the industry, really, that your job position is unique to you, the way you approach it. You know, I when I was first starting out, I worked with set decorators that are dressed in white linen suits that pointed to things to get it done. That's not me, you know. I mean, like, you know, Dr. Martin's up a ladder with a drill. That's how I like to work, because I'm a practical person. But I think it's kind of, it doesn't, there's no right or wrong. And so that's something that I think everyone should take sort of courage from, that you can't be right or wrong. You can only do it your way. But yes, there are an element of amount, you know, there's an amount of skills that you need and some knowledge that you need. You know, you need to be able to do your research. You need to be able to get things right. I'm interested in symbolism. I'm interested in storytelling. So the narrative of things is important. So for example, on Chernobyl, you put things in, you're helping to tell a story. I'm telling a backstory that I'm creating for a character, which is information that I'm not getting from a script, but I think it's important to help flesh out the character. And when you have a really good director like Johan Renck, is absolutely amazing, when you have somebody like him who understands what you do, he'll show that. He'll show all these things, because he understands that that all feeds into the narrative and helps make it rich. So when people tell me, oh, you know, it looked really good and they got the Soviet vibe and they understood that it was the 80s and all of those things about Chernobyl, that's lovely. But I'd like to think on every job I work on, I put in the same amount of effort and attention to detail. But the diff like Johan, seeing that, you know, and then you have somebody like Jakob who is lighting it, and we talked a lot about lighting and how we were doing things and what was going in practically, it makes a big difference, you know, because as I just said to you before about the little bird's marble dildo, I don't even think after all that effort it even got seen. Not that that was crucial to the story in terms of what it looks like, but you know, there are certain things that are, and if a director knows that, then you know, it's a collaboration. It's all exactly about recipes. Yeah. If you don't put one thing in the recipe, it's okay, but it doesn't always work. Whereas I really do believe in Chernobyl that everybody who worked on it, costume, I mean, makeup was amazing. You know, from the writer, the original script was so brilliant before we'd even, you know, before I'd even stepped foot out of my door to go and talk to Luke. I read the script. I knew it was great. I knew it. So it's just the ingredients of everybody putting into the pot. You don't always have control of that. All you can do is your best, really.
Exactly. That was such a great insight. Thank you so much for sharing that. Lastly, my last question is what me and Jasper wanted to know was, you got to work with, I believe it's pronounced, I know it's Craig, but Mazin or Mazin?
Yeah.
we me and Jasper, when we were doing our first episode on this podcast, we were talking about The Last of Us, the video game, and how they're bringing along a TV show adaptation of it later next year. And we were just talking about how, like, obviously talking about the game, but also trying to pronounce his last name. But you got to work obviously with Craig and on Chernobyl for HBO. Yeah. And is there a chance you'll be working with him on his next HBO project, The Last of Us?
Well, I'm not working on that because I'm currently working on something else at the moment. I'm working on a job for Amazon called The Power, which is it's based on a book, Naomi Alderman's book, The Power. It's a great project. I have so much belief in this project. I'm really, you know, I really do think this is going to be good. But as far as Craig goes, I would absolutely love to work with him again. He is, you know, his vision is clear on the page, which is always really nice. His input is really enthusiastic and really helpful. He put together a huge document for everybody in terms of research that we could all go to for Chernobyl, which all the stuff that he'd been looking at himself when he was writing, and that was very helpful. Plus, he was very much like, you know, he would come on set and he would look at everything and he would notice the, all the detail and comment on it and be really, really enthusiastic about it. And he was a really good person to actually talk to about various things if you were not sure or there was a grey area. And he was very much involved. At, I'd love to work with Craig again. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got such a... I was like reading on one website all the other movies that he's done, and it's, you know, working on like superhero movie and scary movies, it's such a leap forward into Chernobyl. You know, I wouldn't expect a director like this, a writer anyway, to go into something so serious. So it must have been a huge sort of leap for him to go into Chernobyl. And from what you've described, like, it's great that he's like questioning things. I think as any creative, you know, it's always good to question things and see, like, and get other people's input into seeing if this is the right thing we should like be doing and be working on, getting it right, basically. But yeah, that sounds amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I can't thank you enough. It's been such a great insight into how you've been working on Chernobyl, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's called The Power, right?
Power, yeah. Hopefully, okay. I'll come back and talk to you about Power.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, we'd love to have you back on the show.
So that is all for episode 3, guys. Again, apologies for the audio quality, but we'll get that better next time, as we'll be having Claire back next time. We want to talk a little bit more about Little Birds with her in one episode, and for another episode we're gonna save that sometime even this year or next year for The Power, which is going to be an Amazon exclusive. So we're really, really, really looking forward to doing that, and Jasper will be with me for that as well. So that's pretty much everything, guys. Please follow us on our socials. That will be in the show notes below. And apart from that, take care, have a great day, and see you guys soon.